Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Wow.
Well, thank you.
Whoever set the CD machine at the wrong speed and didn't set it back, that's a courtesy. That's a nice. Ladies and gentlemen, from Santa Monica.
We're in the middle of the desert.
We're in the middle of the desert.
No, Spike and Rachel, we're not in the middle of the desert, but thank you. Thank you for the observation. Maybe Spike and Rachel reset the machine. Anyway, congratulations to my pal Lolis Eli in New Orleans for winning an Image Award last week for his work on Tremé. You know, it just leaves me wishing there was another award show this week, but I guess we'll live now.
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland.
News of the digital wonderland for you.
Got to be so careful where you stand. In the digital wonderland.
Almost a million British homes will need to have filters installed to prevent TV interference from 4G mobile phone signals at a cost of $150 million. But, you know, we got that on us. A smaller number of homes, about 10,000, will need to switch to satellite or cable TV services in order to avoid degraded picture quality. Degraded program quality? We got that here. Homes that cannot receive these alternate platforms will receive up to $15,000 each to find a solution. Costs will be met by the winner of a spectrum auction later this year. Consultations are currently being held into house electromagnetic spectrum, which is used by analog television, will be offered to mobile operators once airwaves are freed up because the Brits haven't yet turned off their analog TV. In a consultation document released last year, the media regulator in Britain estimated about 760,000 homes could be affected by interference. Homes falling within a certain range of transmitter towers will automatically have a filter issued, while a helpline will be set up to deal with interference cases outside of the protected areas. The filter, which is fitted to a digital TV box, blocks out unwanted noise from the 4G signal. Don't know if that's happening here. Haven't heard anything about it. Of course, we're all digital here. In a very small number of homes, according to authorities, the filters would not be sufficient. That would require the platform change to satellite or cable. So this is over-the-air reception would be interfered with by 4G, like you folks with antennas. It is, ladies and gentlemen, a digital wonderland. Hello, welcome to the show.
Around the mountain pass, keep your head in your hands. If anybody asks what you mean.
from Le Show World Headquarters, the Legacy Le Show Dome, spitting distance from the Pacific Ocean. Don't you dare. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you, don't you think? I mean, it's totally arbitrary, but still, it's time. From pointer.org, as they say in America, which is sort of an in-house website for the journalism fraternity. NPR Handbook offers accuracy tips. I'll read it for you. NPR's newly released Ethics Handbook contains all of the important, if obvious, affirmations about accuracy and accountability you expect to see in a document outlining standards and basic practices. At NPR, quote, accuracy is at the core of what we do, but errors are inevitable. Unquote. Here's a look at some of the accuracy tips in the NPR Ethics Handbook. We shouldn't put ourselves in a position where we believe the thrust of a statement is correct and supported by the facts, but the statement is open to question because we didn't express it with enough precision. Good editors are also good prosecutors. They test, probe, and challenge reporters, always with the goal of making NPR stories as good, and therefore as accurate, as possible. That's right, good is accurate. The handbook outlines several questions journalists should ask themselves and answer before submitting their work. Is every name and title correctly spelled and correctly pronounced? When in doubt, err on the side of attributing, that is, make it very clear where we've gotten our information or where the organization we give credit to has gotten its information. Every reader or listener should know where we got our information. Be specific. It's easy to represent data inaccurately or misleadingly, especially in charts or infographics. Double-check your numbers. If you have good reason to think NPR got something wrong on the air or online, or that there was a serious defect in a report, you have an affirmative responsibility to speak up. The first stop should be your superior. Uh-oh. If the superior does not think that a mistake was made but you disagree, talk it over with the standards and practices editor. NPR journalists who come to their supervisors in good faith should have no concerns about stepping forward. See, they live in a world of should. I bring all this up, ladies and gentlemen, because having read that, I then went to NPR.org. and did a search to see what stories they've run on what caused the flooding in New Orleans in 2005. No, we don't need the trades music anymore. And there's one story about a federal judge ruling that the Corps of Engineers was culpable in the Mr. Go case, which is less than half of the flooding that occurred in New Orleans in 2005. And there's a second story about a reporter traveling with an investigator, Paul Camp, from LSU, or he was at LSU, around the end of September 2005, where the first evidence was gathered that put the lie to the Corps' original explanation that the flood walls in New Orleans were overtopped, that the flood was so humongous that the flood walls were overtopped. Nothing else. Nothing about the two independent investigations' final reports, which place blame squarely on the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. So I have to tell you this because I don't have a superior. But I have no fear of telling you this, since I don't have a superior. But there is much more about the media than what happens when I read the trades for you. There is, for example, news of Nice Corp. And it is definitely big news in Nice Corp world this week. Rupert Murdoch's organization has, with stunning speed, introduced a new Sunday newspaper to replace the now shuttered News of the World.
Here comes the sun, doo-doo-doo-doo. Here comes the sun, I say.
It's only 50 cents. It's the sun on Sunday, and as it comes, it was rushed to the newsstands in Britain. As it was, Nice Corp, News International, will face fresh questions over allegations of bribes at the Sun and hacking at the now-closed News of the World. According to court documents filed by victims of hacking, a senior executive at the company repeatedly tried to cover up evidence of phone hacking by demanding the deletions of emails in 2010. That senior executive is, by some reports, believed to be... Well, no, I can't say that. That's not established yet. So I'll ask my supervisor. The court documents filed by victims of hacking suggest the deletion policy was widely discussed and to some degree carried out. News International, Nice Corp, allegedly produced an email deletion policy. Well, that's what you need if you're going to delete emails, don't you? Otherwise... An email deletion policy in November 2009, whose aim was to eliminate in a consistent manner emails that could be unhelpful in the context of future litigation.
I'd hate to call you a liar, but I don't believe you.
All right, Rupert. I'm just reading. According to these documents, the unnamed senior executive wrote in July 2010, how come we still haven't done the email deletion policy discussed and approved 6 months ago, at the point when the publisher was on the receiving end of phone hacking claims from several celebrities? A further email dated in August was quoted as saying, quote, everyone needs to know that anything before January 2010 will not be kept, unquote.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not. On October of 2010, this was allegedly followed by an email asking, quote, how are we doing with the email deletion policy sent to a senior employee at the News of the World publisher, News Group Newspapers? The employee wrote a covering note saying, should I go and see them now and get fired? Would be a shame for you to go so soon. Yeah. The publisher of the now-closed News of the World also destroyed all computers used by its journalists, according to these reports in October 2010, including one machine of a reporter named specifically in Sienna Miller's phone hacking claim, while in January of last year, all emails on its archive system up to September 2007 were deleted, according to a witness statement from the company's own chief information officer. Hacking is primarily understood to have taken place between 2002 and 2006. The timing of the alleged deletion activity, this is the Guardian reporting, contained in high court documents underlying celebrity hacking cases released to the Guardian at the end of the week, is significant because it took place as accusations of widespread phone hacking first appeared and subsequently as legal actions against the News of the World developed. But wait, there's more. There's always more. You know, because it was reported on this broadcast, it was shared with you. I don't report. I don't leave the house. It was shared with you on this broadcast that Tony Blair was close enough to Rupert Murdoch that he was present for the christening of one of Rupert's new children. You know, the young ones, the ones that aren't going to inherit anything. And now comes this. Tony Blair's wife, Sherry, has joined a second wave of phone hacking claimants, her lawyer confirmed. Blair joins a new second wave of people suing News Group, Nice Corp, and the jailed private investigator that the News of the World commissioned to hack phones, Glenn Mulcair. Ms. Blair's lawyer confirmed a claim had been made in relation to the unlawful interception of her voicemails. There are now, of course, close to 100 alleged phone hacking victims in the process of considering formal claims. Charlotte Church, the singer, is in line, probably first in line, Her court battle should begin tomorrow. The lawyer for News Nice Corp successfully argued for a pre-trial psychological evaluation of Charlotte Church's mother, along with an examination of the family's pub business, said to be affected by years of alleged phone interceptions. This indicates that News Corp's defense against Church's suit will go beyond her personal life to focus on the intimate details of her parents' private life. That may have hardened the resolve of the singer not to settle but to seek punitive damages instead. It's all nice. It's so very nice. It gets nicer. It gets nicer all the time. The Daily Telegraph, also not owned by Rupert Murdoch, reports on the documents regarding the email deletion policy that the aim of the policy was, quote, to eliminate in a consistent manner emails which could be unhelpful in the context of future litigation in which News International is a defendant, which that's the best reason, you know? It could be evidence. Why do we have it here? It could be a way. There is a senior News International management requirement to delete this data as quickly as possible, says an email in September of 2011. The chief IT officer from News International, by the way, Paul Cheesbrough. And just to show that they don't care whom they hurt, because, of course, they're nice. They're Nice Corp. Yeah, they'll hack the phones of football players and politicians' wives and celebrities. But ladies and gentlemen, have they no shame? They've even hacked the phone of a William Morris agent. You better sit down. You should have sat down before I said that. But you better sit down now. From Deadline Hollywood, Nikki Fink writes, I've learned that Scotland Yard has informed Hollywood music agent Julie Colbert, spelled the same way Stephen Colbert spells his, that her cell phone calls were intercepted because she represented Charlotte Church. The agent, who works for music clients in film and television, was back and forth between L.A. and London when the hacking occurred. At the time, Church was working closely with her and even staying as a guest in Colbert's house to get away from the paparazzi constantly trailing her. Scotland Yard told Julie, your number came up as one of the ones that was hacked, an insider tells Nikki Fink. I understand that Colbert hasn't decided yet whether to file a claim because of the hacking. That might prove touchy because her agency, William Morris Endeavor, does a lot of business with Fox. See how it works? No information was provided, Colbert, exactly who did the hacking, whether it was Nice Corp's journalists or private detectives. Bloomberg reports that Glenn Mulcair, the former private detective who hacked phones for News of the World, had an unidentified William Morris agent's numbers, as well as Charlotte Church's New York publicist's numbers among thousands of pages of notes seized by police. That agent was Colbert. And just to show you how sweet this all is, in the same way that Sherry Blair's husband was present at the christening of one of Rupert Murdoch's children, yet her phone was hacked, Charlotte Church, who may be in court tomorrow over phone hacking of her, as well as her agent, sang at Rupert Murdoch's wedding in 1999 when she was 13 years old. Isn't that nice? That is mega nice. Nice people doing nice things. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, the presence of the U.S. phone numbers in the private detective's notes may interest, United States prosecutors and may complicate Nice Corp's efforts to contain lawsuits to the U.K. If it spreads over here, it may really be impossible for them to afford The Simpsons in the future. Nice Corp, ladies and gentlemen. Nice people. Doing nice things. And now.
Superbug! We can't sweep your butt beneath the rug. You're screwing up all kinds of drugs.
News of superbugs, antibiotic-resistant bacteria fostered in livestock through widespread antibiotic use can be transferred to humans. A new study in the journal MBio. MBio has shown. It's long been argued by scientists and many government officials that including antibiotics in the feed of animals, such as pigs and cattle, would lead to the development of antibiotic-resistant germs that could then be passed to humans. This study adds increased weight to that argument. The study, published by the American Society for Microbiology, focused on a strain of staph bacteria called CC398. That's nutty. That is my favorite staph bacteria. That's a methicillin-resistant staph aureus MRSA known as the pig MRSA. Off the pig MRSA, I say. Research illustrated how the germ passed from humans to pigs, where resistance to tetracycline and methicillin was developed before the antibiotic-resistant strain returned to humans. We're seeing this one coming, said Lance Price of the Translational Genomics Research Institute in Flagstaff. The question is, how often will this occur in the future if we don't start controlling antibiotic use? The use of antibiotics in animal feed has become increasingly prevalent in livestock feed to make them grow faster and prevent infections from spreading around the animals in those nice, close-quarter factory food production conditions. The increased use of these drugs results in antibiotic-resistant bacteria strains being developed in the animals. And that's the bad news. Well, there's more bad news. Britain is facing a massive rise in antibiotic-resistant blood poisoning caused by E. coli, bringing closer the specter of diseases that are impossible to treat. Experts say the growth of antibiotic resistance now poses as great a threat to human health as the emergence of new diseases such as AIDS and pandemic flu. Professor Peter Hawkey, a clinical microbiologist, said that antibiotic resistance had become medicine's equivalent of climate change. Don't tell Rick Santorum. The slow but insidious growth of resistant organisms was threatening to turn common infections into untreatable diseases, he says. Already, an estimated 25,000 people die each year in Europe just from being in Europe. No, excuse me, from antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections. It's a worldwide issue, he says. There are no boundaries. We have very good policies on the use of antibiotics in man and animals in the UK, but we are not alone. I'll say. Have you watched TV lately? And that's, as I say, the bad news. But there is good news. A Chilean avocado may contain the secret to fighting antibiotic-resistant infections in hospitals all over the world. A natural substance found in the Chilean rainforest fruit blocks yellow staphylococci's bacteria's ability to reject antibiotics. Is that confusing enough? These specific bacteria are the most common cause of infections in wounds from an operation. They develop a resistance particularly quickly. Strains that do not respond to treatment have already been found in the USA.
USA.
And Greece. We are like Greece. PhD student Hez Gitz Oler from the University of Copenhagen, worked with the Mapuche people in Chile to make the discovery. He said, I've discovered a natural substance in a Chilean avocado plant that's active in combination treatment with traditional antibiotics. Resistant bacteria have an efflux pump in their bacterial membrane that efficiently pumps out antibiotics as soon as they've gained access. I've identified a natural substance that inhibits the pumping action, so the bacteria's defense mechanisms are broken down and the antibiotic treatment allowed to work. So we make the problems, we solve the problems, we make the problems, we solve the problems, we make the, where does the cycle end? That's for no one to know and no one to find out. News of the superbugs, ladies and gentlemen. It is so very much a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Thank you. cidade no coração, atendo ao
This is Le Show, and where are we?
We're in the middle of the desert.
We are in the middle of the desert.
We are at the ocean. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the F-bomb, the new F-bomb, foreclosure. You heard Eve Smith a couple weeks ago talking about some of the defects in the mortgage foreclosure settlement announced with great pride by the Obama administration. And as more details come out, looks better and better. The money that was going to the states to help homeowners may not go to help homeowners. Wisconsin will use a chunk of its $140 million share of the national settlement to help the state budget rather than assist troubled homeowners. That's the word from Governor Walker and State Attorney General Van Hollen. They said the majority of the settlement amount still would go to consumers in Milwaukee and other communities, but most of the $31.6 million coming directly to the state government, most of it will go to help close a budget shortfall, revealed in newly released state projections. That's Wisconsin. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon says he's going to claim a chunk of the money to avert a huge budget cut for public colleges and universities in Missouri. And there will be more states doing the same, according to other reports at Bloomberg. Now, also on the subject, how are the mortgage servicers? The verbiage in this is so confusing, it's probably useful to take a step back for a moment. Servicers are do what the bank used to do when the bank held your mortgage. That is to say, collect the check and foreclose if you don't send the check. That's now a process called servicing, and as you know from all the securitization that's gone on, the bank doesn't keep your mortgage. It travels. And now there are organizations, companies called servicers, which collect the checks and which engage in interesting behavior. Most of those servicers, of course, coincidentally, are owned by banks. But that's another story. Anyway, the National Association of Consumer Advocates, the National Association of Consumer Bankruptcy Attorneys, and the National Consumer Law Center have released a study on how the servicers are doing. You know, they've been told and they've agreed over the years not to engage in bad practices. Well, according to the survey, mortgage servicers continue to initiate foreclosure proceedings improperly either while a homeowner is awaiting a loan modification or due to improper fees or payment processing. Over 90% of the respondents report representing a homeowner placed in foreclosure while awaiting a loan modification in the last year. Homeowners were improperly foreclosed on while awaiting both HAMP and Fannie or Freddie loan modifications. Over 90% of the respondents represent homeowners where the actual foreclosure sale was attempted while awaiting a loan modification in the last year. 80% of the respondents represent homeowners who were placed into foreclosure where there was a wrongful assessment of fees, late fees, broker price, opinions, inspection fees, attorney's fees, and other fees. 79% of the respondents represent homeowners who were placed into foreclosure in the last year where there was a misapplication of payments. 60% of the respondents represent homeowners who were placed into foreclosure in the last year where there was an improper assessment of force-placed insurance. Steve Smith explained that to us about 3 weeks ago. Over 78% of the respondents represent homeowners who've been placed in foreclosure in the last year where the servicer did not properly accept the homeowner's payments. 73% of the respondents represent homeowners who've been placed in foreclosure in the last year while the homeowner was making payments as previously agreed on. Those deadbeats making payments. What do they think they're doing? The new F-bomb, ladies and gentlemen, foreclosure. And it's hard to ignore the big story of the week. What Rick sent, no. The big story of the week, in case you didn't notice, the burning of Korans by United States troops.
USA.
Now, of course, we're awash in the second wave of explanations for that event, which is that it was an accident. But the first wave, sort of washed over by that, was that the holy books burned had writing, handwritten jihadist scribblings on them. That was the original justification given the day the story came out. You know, it was terrorist writings on the holy books, supposedly holy books. That's why they were burned. Except it was now, you know, it was an accident, and we don't even know what the... Anyway, perhaps predictably, the Afghans, not exactly happy, not overjoyed with their occupiers burning their Korans. There have been shootings and killings. Most recently, over the weekend, two, I believe, United States officials killed inside the Interior Ministry in Kabul, leading the coalition to withdraw its civilian employees from ministries in the national capital. This comes as there were reports also that Pakistan had asked the Taliban to join the talks with the United States in Doha, Qatar. These talks have been talked about, and now apparently Pakistan is weighing in because, coincidentally, Hillary Clinton was over talking to the Pakistanis recently. Maybe leaning on them a little bit, do you think? Anyway, big doings over there, and radio is not behind.
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where the pledge drive never ends. From the newly abandoned presidential palace in downtown Kabul, where the withdrawal is never premature, I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Boom and Kaboom, the Explosion Brothers.
Welcome to another edition of Karzai Talk.
Today's program comes to you with the help of the good people at Jim's Fireproof Korans. You'll burn up before they will.
Yes, the pages take a burning and they keep on turning.
But seriously, this has been a very eventful week.
Oh yes, our Pakistani friends told our Taliban friends to start talking to our American friends.
You know, my older brother, I finally figured out the cause of our problems.
And what is that, dear brother?
It's simple. We just have too many friends.
Well, you did get a nice apology this week from President Obama.
I did. He was sorry about the burning of our holy book by our allies.
Yes, and then we apologized to the Americans for the killing of two NATO officials in our Interior Ministry.
That's right. So for those keeping score at home, we're even up on apologies.
Nice to be even up on something.
Killings in the Interior Ministry. Yes. Seriously.
Yes.
It's so unfortunate when people get killed far from a battlefield in a place where they
supposedly should feel safe. You mean like a home? Oops, wrong war. You know what, my brother? Mm. We should try a little experiment, something that would make international news.
Oh, not propping up the Kabul bunk again.
No. Something a little more tangible. Mm. Why don't we burn a Bible? You're not laughing. It's in the format. We both laugh.
No, I'm just thinking about the reaction.
Oh, it could make Rick Santorum very mad.
Well, it's radio. We can only say it was a bad sound effect. I presume you thought this out enough to bring a Bible?
Oh, you know I did. And I brought a lighter.
Ooh, Mr. High-Tech himself.
Okay, listeners, just remember, this is the other Karzai who's doing this.
Should I sing something while we're waiting?
That would make Rick Santorum very mad, as well as the rest of the inhabited world.
Well, you work on the lighter, and I'll take a call. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, first-time caller. Long-time Pakistani.
Well, hello, my friend. Greetings.
I heard you say earlier that Pakistan had urged the Taliban to talk to the Americans in the Doha meetings in Qatar.
Well, no, I did not mention Doha.
But we'll always have Doha.
How's that lighter coming?
Well, it seems I need a small coin.
Oh, to open the fuel container?
No, to buy a new lighter.
Yes, caller, we haven't forgotten you.
Well, I happen to be very highly placed in my government, and I can tell you that it was only a very specific section of that government that talked to the Taliban.
I'm guessing it wasn't the motor vehicles department. But, of course, for any part of the Pakistani government to be giving advice or direction to the Taliban, that suggests the Taliban leadership is domiciled in Pakistan.
We know it is, dear brother.
But it's always so nice when theory agrees with observation.
Well, I just wanted you to know there are very many of us who don't believe in telling the Taliban to talk to the Americans.
Because you believe it's wrong to continue to control my enemies?
No, because we think it's wrong for them to talk to the Americans. Love the show, though.
Well, thanks for the call. How's the lighter coming?
I refilled it. Should work.
That is one lucky Bible.
I think I know what my mistake was.
Having a smarter, younger brother?
No, I swapped some steel piping for a shipment of butane. The piping was corroding in a way you couldn't see. I thought it was a good deal.
So, and?
And apparently I bought 3 truckloads of bad butane. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, I've got some gasoline-soaked rags I could drop off on my way out of town.
Hello, caller. Hello. I detect what I think is an Australian accent.
Either that or I've just burned the roof of my mouth on some hot lavash.
Did you say that you're leaving?
Yes, I'm part of the force that's undeploying.
Well, I prefer to think of them as just temporarily under-deploying. So, caller, do you have a question?
Well, yes, we're pulling out on the highway to Kandahar.
Oh, we're very proud of that. My company provided some of the asphalt.
It was the asphalt that didn't stay down.
The spec said nothing about adhesion.
And I was wondering, where's the best place along the highway to get a new pair of shock absorbers? We've got sort of a vintage truck here.
You didn't have a contract for shocks, did you?
No, we never handle accessories. Too much spillage.
Caller, I have to say, Google is your friend on this matter.
Oh, thanks, mate. I had no idea Google sells shocks.
Thanks for the call, and, So?
Now I guess Rick Santorum will have to be hungry at something else.
Well, we still have a couple of public schools open here.
That should do it.
We had help on today's edition of Karzai Talk from the Taliban Foundation.
We're not your father's Taliban.
Legal services for Karzai Talk from the law firm of Ketchum & Newcomb. I'm Mahmoud. Don't govern like my brother. And I'm Hamid. Don't do business like my brother. And join us again for another edition of Karzai Talk. This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Two employees of the TV sports network ESPN have been disciplined after making offensive and inappropriate references to Jeremy Lin. The American Chinese New York Knicks basketball phenomenon Anthony Federico was fired for writing a caption reading "A Chink in the Armor" last Friday following the Knicks' loss to New Orleans. Anchor Max Britos was suspended for 30 days for using the same phrase. ESPN issued a statement describing the phrase as offensive and inappropriate. We again apologize especially to Mr. Lin. His accomplishments are a source of great pride to the Asian American community, including the Asian American employees at ESPN. There's diversity for you. Dateline Okuma, Fukushima, Japan, the crippled Fuk number one nuclear power plant was shown to the media the last few days. For the first time since the government declared in December that the nuclear facility had achieved a stable cold shutdown state. This was aimed at letting people know about progress being made in efforts to bring the troubled nuclear power station under control. The plant's chief, Takeshi Takahashi, apologized for the repeated water leaks at the plant, telling visiting reporters, "We've taken measures primarily to keep key facilities warm, but there's no denying our calculations were inaccurate." Dateline London, British heavyweight boxer Derek Chisora apologized this week for his inexcusable behavior before and after his WBC fight in Munich with Vitali Klitschko. "I feel I must wholeheartedly apologize for my part in the regrettable scenes both before and after what was to be the biggest night of my career," Chisora said in a statement. He slapped Klitschko during weigh-in in Munich and then brawled during a post-fight press conference with fellow British boxer David Haye. Quote, "While my behavior was inexcusable, there were many things that went on behind the scenes that ultimately caused my frustrations to boil over. However, this is, of course, no excuse," Chisora said. He said he could not provide specifics, but said he'd been struck by a bottle during the altercation with Hay. "Bottom line is," he said in his statement, "I've let my family, my team, and worst of all, the support I love down. I acknowledge my actions were totally unprofessional. With or without provocation, now with a cool head and the benefit of hindsight, my actions in the weekend were regrettable to say the least. I'm deeply embarrassed at the scenes reported in the media." I tried. Sadie Frost, heard of her? And her 12-year-old daughter Iris had a fun mother-daughter day at London's Fashion Week at a Vivian Westwood show. But Frost, who's BFF to Kate Moss and ex-wife to Jude Law, ended the day by apologizing to fans who were scandalized by Iris's outfit choice. Iris sat front row with her mother, smiling at her first ever fashion show, wearing what seemed to be an innocent candy heart printed dress. But the newspaper The Telegraph reported the little hearts on the frock were filled with phrases such as "blow me," "drink poison," "eat blank," and "choke." While at the show, Sadie focused on the fashion, telling reporters about Iris. "She's 12 and very, very into fashion." But she addressed critics later in the evening, tweeting, "I assumed it was just the sayings the sweets have on them. I'm sorry for any upset it may have caused. Iris is a sweet, innocent girl." That is sweet and innocent. British radio station Jazz FM has apologized after it played several minutes of audio from a gay porn film. That'll help ratings. The station's pre-recorded Funky Sensation program featured a clip of what appeared to be two men having sex while a jazz tune played over the top of it. That was probably just the soundtrack of the... If I know... That was what we now call San Fernando Valley porn jazz. Management said in a statement, "There was some unauthorized activity and inappropriate behavior in the studio on Saturday evening, activity we take extremely seriously. An investigation regarding this matter began immediately, and should it be necessary, disciplinary action will be taken against the individual concerned." Head of programming Mike Vitti issued an apology, saying, "Unfortunately, we had unauthorized access to the live feed on Jazz FM. which resulted in a highly regrettable incident. Please accept our profound and sincere apologies for any offenses that may have been caused, and rest assured we've taken steps to assure there will be no repeat of this incident. Next time, it will be straight porn. Days after trashing Ashton Kutcher in the direction that 2.5 Men has taken with him, Charlie Sheen posted a tweet this week apologizing for the whole outburst. And that's enough of that. The commander of the International Coalition in Afghanistan apologized and promised an investigation into reports that NATO personnel mishandled Qurans. You know that. U.S. General John Allen said in a statement he ordered a thorough investigation after learning the coalition forces at Bagram may have improperly disposed of a large number of Islamic religious texts, including Qurans. The organizers of this year's Brit Awards have issued an apology to Adele for cutting short her second acceptance speech of the evening, an incident which led to the singer raising her middle finger to the crowd and millions of watching TV viewers in frustration. Unfortunately, that's an American gesture. The Brits usually raise two fingers, not one. But she's Welsh. She doesn't know how they do it in Britain. German Chancellor Angela Merkel apologized Thursday to the families of 10 people, mostly Turks, slain by a neo-Nazi terrorist cell in a hate-driven killing spree that for years went unsolved by Germany's usually efficient police force. She called the attacks an attack on our country. The so-called donor murders, named after the kebab sandwich associated with Turkish immigrants, and the authorities' acknowledgement that the investigation was botched, have sown fears of a strengthening far-right ideology in Germany. That'd be nice. Deadline Indianapolis, Indiana State Senator, Representative Bob Morris has apologized for what he called inflammatory remarks about the Girl Scouts, but he's standing by his decision not to sign a resolution marking the organization's centenary. In a written statement, the freshman Republican lawmaker said he's had time to reflect on his letter to fellow House Republicans in which he wrote the Girl Scouts promote the sexualizing of young girls, abortion, homosexuality, and cites feminists, lesbians, and communists as role models. Quote, I realize now my words were emotional, reactionary, and inflammatory. For that, I sincerely apologize. I apologize to the Girl Scouts of Indiana and all of the girls and parents of Indiana who are participating in and running their Girl Scout organizations. However, unquote. However, he still won't sign the resolution because he maintains the Girl Scouts is partnered with Planned Parenthood. Both organizations deny any such association. Dateline Dublin, the outlawed Irish Republican Army, apologized this week for its 1973 killing of a 9-year-old Northern Ireland boy who stumbled across an IRA bomb while playing in his backyard. The declaration was a major shift. For decades, the group had blamed the boy's death on the British Army. His father, Friday, said it wasn't enough. A Wisconsin seventh grader was suspended from a school's basketball team for speaking a Native American language. Sacred Heart Catholic School in Shawano, Wisconsin, is 60% Native American, yet when a teacher heard Miranda Washinawatok telling a friend how to say I love you in the Menominee tongue, the teacher angrily objected, saying, how do I know you're not saying something bad? The school has since apologized. The owner and publisher of the Atlanta Jewish Times found himself apologizing a couple weeks ago for suggesting that Israeli security forces in the U.S. take out President Obama, who he said has been deemed unfriendly to the Jewish state. In an opinion piece last month, Andrew Adler offered that suggestion. A hit against the president would preserve Israel's existence. He has, as I say, since apologized. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Light of day and the light. 'Cause every day somebody's drowning and somebody's lost at sea, but every day, well, someone ups and walks from the wreckage. My Susan did wait, she waited there for a man. They said he was gone, lost to the sea, but the roses were in bloom in her head. And she knew of the love he bore, and he swam till he stood on that Kerry shore. And the people, they sang, she told them, you don't know until you know. Cause every day somebody's drowning and somebody's lost at sea, but every day, well, someone ups and walks from the wreckage. And the women would wait, they'd wait all night for the boats to come.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, safe, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Not even time for Addy, just this time for this brief note. High levels of radiation have been detected in municipalities and evacuation zones around the crippled Fuk nuclear plant, the highest reading recorded in one town, according to a midterm report, 470 millisieverts per year. The annual readings topped a level deemed uninhabitable under a proposed new classification in many spots north-northwest of the plant that was crippled by the quake. So, a lot of cheap real estate in Japan, if you can take it. You can wear those lead clothes, can't you? They're very fashionable. And you can get them with little hearts with cute sayings on them. I do believe. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like NPR's accuracy policy applying to NPR if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. Tippett, Le Show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Hawaii, and Chicago desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the more than 56,000 followers at The Harry Shearer. I'm going to go burn a Kama Sutra. Ladies and gentlemen, the show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from the desert.